Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
As you get ready to expand your knowledge this offseason, make sure to save the date for USA Football's 2020 National Conference taking place February 21st through the 23rd in Louisville, Kentucky. This is more than just a clinic. It's your chance to hone your ability to teach proven and effective techniques while connecting with coaches across the country. Most coaches are satisfied if their regional clinic delivers just one or two nuggets of information. National Conference delivers a one-of-a-kind, high school-focused, live field experience that will give you an abundance of drills and techniques to improve your team's performance. Coaches can deep dive into both X's and O's and technique at classroom and chalk talk sessions. Finally, USA Football delivers top keynote speakers year after year. Here's a few of the keynotes from previous years: Mike Tomlin, John Gruden, PJ Fleck, and Jeremy Pruitt. As an added bonus this year, paying attendees can get access to the advanced tackling system and contact system for blocking and defeating blocks following the event, and have a chance to earn the new advanced contact certification. If you're ready to get to work on next season, don't miss out on USA Football's National Conference. Learn more at nationalconference.usafootball.com/podcast. Enter the code PODCAST179 to save at registration. In 2018, Brian Kite joined me for Season 2 of The Leadership Journey. On today's podcast, we highlight some of BK's insight on building a culture in a noisy world, effort and commitment, what it takes to be an elite coach, the intersection of culture and strategy, win by don't, and self-awareness. This podcast really is for anybody, not just football coaches, but BK and I specifically targeted football coaches and what we could do to make our culture and our leadership stronger in our programs, as well as improve ourselves as coaches. Let's take a listen to this first segment. In this one, BK talks about complaining about the amount of time you have with your players, and instead of doing that, making the most of it and changing your outlook. He also talks about dealing with people, parents, and friends who do have more time with your players than you do.
Every coach, I mean, literally every coach, regardless of sport, that I have worked with over the last 5 years, has at some point expressed frustration and sometimes even exasperation at trying to build culture, their culture, while being surrounded by people, institutions, and influences that didn't support or reinforce the culture they were trying to build. Just recently, I was with Division I coaching staff, and here was the biggest challenge that they voiced. They only get access to the athletes, whatever those hours are a day, right? The NCAA mandate
is
20-hour
week.
Yeah, right. So it's what, 3 hours a day ballpark, okay? Mm-hmm. And here's what they express frustration about. They've got 3 hours a day of influence over these young men, and they're losing the battle of the influence of the other 21 hours in their life. And they were just expressing the difficulty and the frustration. And in some ways, some of the people in the room were expressing the impossibility of it. Literally, we're saying it's impossible for us to do what we want to do, given the fact that we only get 3 hours, and what the players are exposed to and told and what they hear in the other 21 hours of their life in a day. And my reply to that staff is what I say to every coaching staff. And that is, it's not impossible. You just have to be better. If the world gets 21 hours a day of impact and you only get three, first of all, don't say only get three. Say we get three. And second of all, that simply means it's your skill, it's your relationship, it's your compelling culture against those other forces, skill and relationship and compelling culture. And it is absolutely a competition. Who's better? Now, make sure you hear what I said. It's not a fight. I actually might use that language from time to time. And I do sometimes say culture is an everyday fight. But I don't think that's the right language in this context, because it's not a fight of you versus them. And we'll come back to this. as coaches, we can't afford to get caught fighting against those entities. Because sometimes those entities, sometimes, Keith, who are the people that you are having to compete against for your players' attention and mindset and ear and heart? Who is the hardest group of people that you as a coach have to influence, frankly, sometimes even against, and protect a player's mind from? Who's that group of people? Who's the hardest one?
Depending what level you're at, I would say peers is a big one. And if you're at the high school level, I think parents could be a difficult one as well if they don't see what they want for little Johnny.
And you don't think that happens at the college level too?
Oh, I know it happens. I just never had to deal with it as the offensive coordinator. That's what the head coach gets paid for. But yeah, it would happen at the college level as well. Maybe not on the scale, but yes, it happens.
Right. And yeah, of course, it's different at college and high school, but it still happens at both. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. And the reason I say you can't go to fight is because if you're fighting a parent, you're going to lose that every time. You're going to lose that battle. One, you're going to lose it on the small scale between you and that player. They're going to choose their parents. And by the way, if you win that and they choose to follow you, if you're fighting against a parent and they choose to follow you and not the parent, what's the impact of that young person's life?
Yeah, it's not good.
I would say even if you win that fight, that's not something to be proud of. Number two, on the large scale, if you are a coach who fights parents, you have a shelf life that is not real long, and it ain't going to win much, and the experience is not going to be great. So even the broad strategy of creating a culture and then fighting and resenting parents, and I just see and hear a lot of coaches do that. And yes, by the way, even when you are talking in social times, in social circles, and you express all the negative stuff that we express about parents, and then you try to overcome that in how you coach, but then you step out for coffee or for beers, you're relaxing or whatever it is, and you're crushing parents, and all of that toxic energy comes out about parents, that stuff shows up in how we coach. So we actually have to shift and switch our lens.
In this next segment, BK talks about dealing with players who you think aren't giving the kind of commitment that you wish they had, as well as dealing with those players who are in alignment with you. He also talks about giving kids a system and the freedom to work inside that system. Let's take a listen.
When I think about how a coach deals with variable and disappointing sometimes effort and commitment levels from players, and I think to myself, what is it the great coaches do? What is it that average coaches do? What is it that the poor coaches do? The coaches who don't get the results and don't move players and don't have their trust and lose their locker rooms. The first thing is a gap in mindset between a coach and a player, where the coach simply has expectations that they project onto a player, where they expect the player to be the same as the coach. And the coach's standard, it has to be the player's standard. You need to have standards, but your standards need to apply by decision, not yours. I mean, it'd be the same, Keith, as me being the CEO and saying everybody in my company has to think like I think, has to have the same level of competitiveness that I have. But that would make no sense. Like, you just transfer the environment. That doesn't make sense. My job as CEO is to make sure that my people are the best versions of themselves, that they go on a journey of getting better all of the time at who they are and how they operate within our business. Yes, I have standards, but my job is to apply the standards that work for our business, not the same standard as me. It's just not reasonable to expect them to think that way. And then on the second piece of observe, I think this is probably the next thing that coaches dealing with variable effort levels and commitment levels can deal with and do with the observation they have. And it's two things. I don't recall if we've ever actually talked about this, Keith. It's freedom and structure. Or flip it around, structure and freedom. Mm-hmm. And that is how do you move those two levers, structure and freedom, based on where the effort and commitment level is? Well, what would you do with structure and freedom for a player or a group of players who have demonstrated significant commitment, significant effort, and meeting all of the standards that you are putting out, or most, if not all, of the standards you are putting out. How much freedom and how much structure do those players need? And based on your observation, what do you think you would do with structure and freedom, more or less, et cetera? How would you do structure and freedom with players like that?
Well, I think when I'm thinking of that, and we're talking kind of two situations, both on and off the field, but ultimately this is about what those guys do. Their job is to get out on the field and perform. And I kind of always, I used a term I learned from Andrew Coverdale. He called it educated freedom. So initially, he's going to provide that structure. He's going to provide all the scaffolding as a teacher and a coach of the game to get them there. And when they show that, you know, they're doing what they need to do, then he starts to let them have some freedoms with what they're doing. So from a X and O perspective, for example, you might have two receivers out in a twins formation, and one of those guys know, hey, in this situation with what I'm seeing, it's more advantageous for me to be up on the ball and for my buddy to be back. So he moves up and he tells that guy move back. And it's not within the structure. Yep. It's not with what the coach called, but he has that ability now to put himself in a better position because he's done all the things coaches asked him to do. He has that understanding as well that he can go out and essentially take ownership of that situation. And I think I might be talking about it, Brian, in different terms than you want to relate right now, but I think that's part of the equation. Those guys still have that structure, but now their ability to execute, to perform within there, they have some range with where they can go to best suit their skills, to best suit them, as well as, it's not all about them, as well as best suit the team.
The principle applies across the board, Keith, and you nailed it. You provide structure as a coach, and then players have freedom within the structure that you provide. And so players who are highly committed because you've observed, they're not highly committed in theory. They're not highly committed in words. They are highly committed in action. And that only happens by observing a player and letting a player not tell you who he is, but what? Show you who he is. And when you observe that, then that player doesn't need as much structure from you. And that structure could be anything. They don't need to be told exactly, you know, they don't need to be told arrive an hour early so that they're not accidentally late, because you know, if you tell that player one time to be there at the time you say, that player will be there 15 minutes before that, because that player makes that decision. That's how committed they are, which means you don't have to call and check up on that player. You don't need the night before reminder. That player needs somewhat less structure, and they get more freedom because they have demonstrated through observation that they don't need it. They've earned the right to more freedom and less structure. Not none, just less. That can be an on-field, off-field, workout, game plan, execution, Friday night thing. It can be anywhere. But what about the players who aren't as committed, who don't put as much effort? What do they need more of, and what then gets taken away? They need more structure and less freedom within it. But you do it in a way where you are not judging them and you're not angry at them. You are doing it because they have demonstrated through observation that when given more freedom and not as much structure, they have not demonstrated the ability to consistently meet the standard. And so you pull some of that freedom away, you provide more of the structure until what? They demonstrate they can meet the standard with the freedom within the structure that you're providing. And there's a nice sliding scale. It's not perfect. It's a combination of art and science. But the conversation I had this morning with a coach was one where she was asking, I've got there's an event, and it was a leadership event. And I was putting it out to my players, and they were all asking me, well, do I have to go? And can I come at this time? And can I come late? And she was providing all of this freedom, and she was trying to let them make their own decisions through this. But she had a standard that she wanted them to meet, and she was providing this freedom, and they were basically walking all over it. And she found herself answering 30 questions, and all of them were finding ways to skirt showing up to, I think it was a day-long symposium. I'll just make sure for our purposes, a day-long leadership symposium where they had a ton to learn, and they were all basically trying to find ways to not come or not have to do as much or whatever it was. So she provided all of this freedom, and she was getting really frustrated that the players didn't want to go and learn more about leadership. Because she did. And we had this conversation, and it was so applicable to our conversation today. how do you fix that? Or what do you do with that? Not fix. What do you do with that? Well, you tell them, you're all going to come to this meeting. You're going to be here at this time. You're going to dress in this way, and you'll have a pen, and you'll have a full blank pad of paper with you. I'll see you at 7 a.m. We will be done at 5 p.m. This is mandatory attendance. We will sit together, and we will review our notes when we are done. There's the structure. Mm-hmm. Oh, do I have to come? Did you see the mandatory part? Yes. Do not ask a question about something I have already communicated to you, because it is there. If you have a question about how we're going to do this, I'm more than willing to hear them. But if a team is going to push all of those things, well, then tell them what you need to do to meet the standard that you're going to have them meet. Because if the team's not at that level, then they just haven't demonstrated the commitment level to meet the standard you're asking for. So that freedom gets pulled away, and I'm giving you more structure. And then they learn how to work like a champion. But most people don't come out of the box. They have to be taught how to work like a champion. I did. I didn't come out of the box like that. I had to be provided more structure, not less, in order to learn how to operate with discipline and how to be great in, you know, football and business and all these areas. So there's a sliding scale of structure and freedom. And don't view structure as control. Don't view structure as authority. Don't view structure as a tool to hold over people's head. Structure is guidance. Structure is standards. Structure is, think they're like the, you ever been bowling with the bumper rails? Structure is ensuring that the person continues down a path that is going to help them. If someone follows your structure, they ought to perform better. Now, they might not like early portions of it, and they might feel constrained early. That's okay. But as they move down the path of your structure, and they have the freedom within it to bounce left, bounce right off the rails, okay. But by the time they get towards the end, and by the time they have operated within that structure for a while, we are on the hook. I heard you use the word earlier. We are responsible for making sure they are better because of it, and that they learn how to move their way down it without all of that structure from us, so that we slowly take that structure away and hand them more freedom as they go.
From the time I met BK, he always talked about the mountain of average. Really, that dominates any kind of segment that you might look in, any kind of job, any kind of area where people want to excel. In this next segment, he talks about what separates elite coaches from average coaches.
Start with the question, what separates elite coaches from average coaches? And I would encourage you to just ask that question to yourself and think about how you would answer that right now in this moment. What separates elite coaches from average coaches? How would you answer that question as a listener? Where's your mind go right away? And not what makes you just better at your job, not generically better, but asking the question, what separates elite from average? What separates a 500 coach from a coach who can consistently get up in that 7-8 wins a year range, which isn't elite, but it's not 500? Because how you answer that question for yourself, it's going to shape the way you do your whole job. And for our observation, what separates elite coaches from average coaches, it's not technical skill. It's not football knowledge. And in fact, a quick scan of the football universe, and I mean the football universe, it actually paints a pretty bleak picture of those guys, and I'll just limit it to guys right now, those guys who know the most about football compared to those who are actually the elite winningest coaches. Have you noticed, Keith, that all of the people touted as the most brilliant on-field tactical minds, it's not a huge percentage of those guys that are the winningest, most successful elite coaches in the game? Have you noticed that?
No, it's true. Yeah.
And so what is it that separates an elite coach from an average coach? It's behavior skills. And the reason for that isn't even remotely surprising. The reason it's behavior skills compared to football skills is that coaching is all about what can you get other human beings to do. Coaching isn't about how smart you are. It's not about how much you know. It's not about how many plays you've called. It's about what can you get another person to do? That's an emotional question. It's a personal question. I mean, something separates elite coaches from average coaches. Not years of experience, not talent, not resources. There are certain behavior skills that separate an elite coach from one who's just experienced in the sport. I think of it this way, Keith. I'm curious your thoughts. Job skills are for your effectiveness as a coach, but behavior skills are for your excellence. And that's that line of average versus elite.
In this next section, we focus on how execution is the intersection of culture and strategy. Execution really is made up behaviors. So additionally, BK talks about how culture is based on the behaviors and the three different characteristics of behavior.
We do. And what I would tell everybody listening, if you don't already know this from at least what we teach, execution is the intersection of culture and strategy. That when you look at how a team executes, there's two primary components, your culture and your strategy. Your strategy is what you want to do. Your culture is going to be how you do it. And what we're talking about here, and again, for those of you, reminder, and for those of you who don't know, the purpose of culture is to drive execution that wins. Specifically, culture's job is to drive winning behavior, not make people really good winning, as in like W's. I mean, it's culture's job is to drive the behaviors that win. And the behaviors that win are a whole myriad. It could be intensity, toughness, focus, attitude, belief, all kinds of things that are winning behaviors that are different for each one. Shrugging off a loss and not letting it stay with you, like a DB who gets beat for a touchdown. If that person gets in their head and goes out on the field moping for the next series, that's behavior that doesn't win. Right? The most important play in football is this play. The next most important play is the one after that. So when I say execution is the intersection of culture and strategy, what we're talking about here is in season, we tend to focus a lot on, and let me go right to you on this about your experience as a coach and what you talk to coaches, probably not usually on the podcast, but the private conversations you have with coaches. As a coach, so much time is spent on in season is spent on the strategy part of execution. But when you get home from practice and you're around the dinner table, or you're drifting away mentally when you're at home and just sitting on the couch, or when you have a night before a game, how much of your thought goes to the behavior of certain players and what are they going to do when the moment arrives? And I wonder how this person will show up. And I wonder if their preparation has been really good this week or if they're not really feeling it. How often as a coach did you find yourself thinking and frankly, even sometimes worrying about behavior? And that was the biggest gap of execution on your team, not your play design.
Yeah, I think those do become your worries. It's not, is this scheme going to work? It's, is this guy going to take care of it? And yeah, some of those things come in about the behaviors behind it. You know the individual. And I think, as we're talking about this, Brian, that's kind of the art of this whole coaching deal is that we have to understand that sometimes part of our practice plan, and it could come out in practice, it could come out in meetings, whatever it is, that we're also cultivating those behaviors, those beliefs in that player so that on game day, he's not going to default behaviors when things get chaotic, when things don't go as expected, etc.
You know what we want to do for coaches, the value we want to provide is we want to provide simple systems for leadership, culture, and behavior that wins. That's the emphasis here today is let's make sure that we are paying attention to behavior and what behavior comes down to. Simplify it for your team. First, simplify it for yourself in your own life as a coach and just as a person, and then bring, after you've investigated and brought self-awareness to yourself, then bring it to players and break behavior down into three simple things. Simplify it for everyone. Behavior is three. It's what you do, what you don't do, and it's how you do it. And let me just describe those real quick. What you do are the things that you're putting out into the world. Okay, literally the stuff that you're going to go do, it's the path you're going to take. It's the attitudes you have. It's the actions you engage in. It's the words that you say. What you don't do are the things that you avoid because you don't think they're going to win. You don't think they're good for your life, or it's simply not something you want involved in your particular atmosphere or your situation. It's the attitudes you refuse to have. It's the actions you resist, and it's the words you reject to come out of your mouth or be inside your program. And how you do it is your situational judgment and style and skill. For example, Keith, you and I could both choose to do the same things and not do the same things, but how you and I go about it might be different. You and I both might say we want to build relationships and connect with people. We don't want to potentially, you know, hurt people's feelings unnecessarily. We don't want to waste our time, and we don't want to do work that is unenjoyable. But how we go about that from a style perspective and a skill perspective might be very different. You might want to connect with people by listening. I might want to connect with people by sharing. So there's not one how. There's 1,000 hows, 10,000, 100,000 hows. But what you want to come back to is for your players and for you, are you exceptionally clear in season? These are the things we have to do behaviorally. I'm not talking about blocking. I'm not talking about just watching film. Sure, watching film is important, but I'm talking about what do you have to do? You have to choose the attitude and emotion you show up to every practice and every drill with. You have to choose that. If you don't do that, then you're going to be susceptible to going through a drill or a practice with some emotion that you didn't decide on beforehand, and it might be an autopilot one. And now your how is going to be affected because you're not even doing the things that are necessary, and what you're choosing not to do is harming you, and now the how isn't even really helping. You're trying to work really hard, but you've got an angry attitude when in reality, what you need to have is an attitude of enjoyment and loving the process and the journey.
In this next segment, BK shares one of my favorite lessons that he talked about on the podcast, win by don't. And he shares the 5 don'ts. Let's take a listen.
And you mentioned something when we started. You said the phrase win by don't. Mm-hmm. And what you're referring to when you say that is something I believe in that we talked about. I believe in football and in life, success begins with the things you choose not to do. I think that's where it starts. Here's why I believe in that. Because I believe too often people worry about making mistakes, but they worry about making the wrong mistakes. Mm-hmm. We get it flipped. People worry about making small mistakes when in reality, you ought to make a ton of those. What we need to focus on is don't do anything that could cost you everything, right?
Correct.
Football and life. Don't do anything that could cost you everything. And then the second is don't do anything that has way more downside than upside. Don't do anything that has a big balance to it. It's too much risk because it doesn't have a payoff that is a big upside. And let me give 5. And we talk about these a lot with teams. Let me give these 5. Some of you listening have heard these, and I bet there's some of you who have installed these in your teams, but most of you have not. They're 5 don'ts. Not 5 do's, 5 don'ts for a football team or any team for that matter, that in our observation and our team has come up with these. There's 5 things that you want to avoid. And in a 10 or 12 game season, our observation is we've asked coaches and players and just watched ourselves. We believe that there are in a 10 to 12 game season, there's 2.5 games that will swing for a win or loss just based on not doing these 5 things, meaning this. If you can go the whole season and not do any of these 5, that's good for 2.5 wins. But if you go through this season and you do 1 or more of these, chances are the loss tally is going to have somewhere between 2 and 3 losses more in it than if you were able to avoid the 5. So here are the 5. Number 1. Don't do anything that could take away from practice or playing time. And these apply to coaches and players. Don't do anything that could take away from practice or playing time. How many players are unprepared for a game because they did something during the week or during the off season that cut into their practice or playing time, and they find themselves not as good as they wanted to be because they couldn't have enough reps in practice, or because, you know, by the time they were playing in game three or four, because they were suspended for the first three or four games, or academically ineligible or something else. How often does that happen? All the time.
Yep.
It's almost, all of a sudden in week five,
it's almost
the
cliche.
Team just doesn't have one of, yeah, the team just doesn't have one of their best players. So the first thing is, if the option is in front of you to do something and the thing you're considering doing has the potential to take away from practice or playing time, if somebody sees it or knows about it or finds out or did something, the answer is always don't do that. It doesn't matter what you feel in the moment. It doesn't matter what is going on. And this even goes for coaches. You know, whether it's coaches on social media, whether it's coaches' interactions with parents, whether it's coaches' interaction with administration or sideline or officials or the press. It doesn't matter how emotionally riled up you are or how right you think you are. If you're not on the field and you're not there in the game, you can't help the team. So that comment you want to make to somebody and that thing you want to do to somebody else or whatever it happens to be, just don't do it. Be tough, because you're not helping anybody from the sideline or sitting back at home. So first, don't do anything to take away from practice or playing time. Second thing, do not lie to coaches, colleagues, or players. For players, it's don't lie to coaches or teammates. And for coaches, it's don't lie to your coaches and don't lie to your players. Don't lie to them. Don't tell them the truth. Don't hide reality. I mean, how many coaches get into, I really want to dial into coaches, but I also want to really dial into players too. How many coaches go out with game plans that they're not confident in because they were just unwilling to have a conversation with one of the other coaches about what was going on?
Oh, it happens all the time. I can think of a time in my career, and I won't mention the time or the place, so it doesn't maybe embarrass an individual, but you know, I had a particular line coach who had a misunderstanding of the protection and was utilizing something that he had done in a previous program, and it was causing all kinds of problems for our quarterbacks with their vision, with them being confident in the pocket. And it was me seeing it again and again and again on film and making the connection that we're coaching this wrong. And when it was coming up in the meetings, it was kind of, I think he was a younger coach. He was embarrassed that he got that one wrong. And instead of saying, yeah, I got it wrong, you know, we need to get it fixed, we went weeks before that came out. And you think you're trying to do well, you're protecting yourself or maybe your players, whatever it might be. But ultimately, you have to have the truth come out and what's going on. And I've seen it with off the field behavior too. A coach hears of something that one of his players did. He doesn't want to lose that guy. And maybe later in the week, it comes up. And if you knew about it on Monday, you might have been getting a player ready for Friday. But now it's Wednesday, and finally the truth comes out, and now you're in a bind. You've lost practice time for that next guy.
Yep. And that's just what happens. I mean, it's so common. It's so unfortunate. And I say it really simply. Lying or avoiding the truth, it's too expensive and it's too inefficient. It just is. It's too expensive and it's too inefficient to not tell the truth. So you just own it and go. And from a coach's perspective and from a player's perspective, understand this. Coaches, talk to your players about this and talk to yourself and your staff about this. There is nowhere else to hide anymore. In the past, lying was something that, while it has never worked, it was a lot easier to get away with stuff in the past, however far back you want to go. In today's world, there is no hiding. It might not come out right now, but it will. It all comes out. So you might as well just say, look, I'm just not going to do that. I'm just going to tell it like it is. I'm going to tell the truth, even when you make mistakes. So number one, don't do anything to take away from practice or playing time. Number two, don't lie to teammates, to coaches, to colleagues. Number three, don't BCD. Don't blame, don't complain, don't be defensive. And most of you have heard that one from me a lot and before, and it is a lifelong attack. Just don't do it. Go nuclear on that in your life. Go nuclear on that in your program. It doesn't mean you have to be a hard ass. Keep your style, but there just won't be any blaming. There won't be any complaining, and there won't be any defensiveness. I was talking with a coach the other day, and he was talking about being tough and other stuff, and I just say this, like, if all you can do is complain, there's really two things that that indicates. Number one, it indicates you're weak and you can't solve your problems. And number two, it means you're soft. It just does. If you complain, you're soft. You can be a good person. That's cool. But if you complain, you're just soft. You're just not tough. Tough people don't complain. They either go fix it, they go make it better and improve it as much as they can, or they say, I can't do anything about it, and they just go attack whatever is next. They don't waste time complaining. So don't be CD. Number four, don't violate our culture. That assumes that you know what your culture is and that everybody knows what it is and that the lines are very clearly drawn, but don't violate our culture. Whatever your standards are, don't violate that. You can do all kinds of other stuff. You just can't violate our culture. If we got four rules, just don't violate any of those. You can all have all kinds of room for personality, all kinds of room for style within the context of our culture. Just don't do that. Let me give a simple example. Randy Moss, people had problems with him throughout his career. And guess where he didn't have problems? It was the one program he never had a problem, and it's almost the one place hardly anybody has problems from a culture perspective and a behavior perspective. What program in the NFL?
That's the New England Patriots.
Because guess what the rule is? It's New England Patriots. You can do whatever you want, be whoever you want, act however you want, as long as what? It's within the boundaries of how we do it.
Right. Do your job.
That's it. That's it. And so Randy Moss had all this personality, and he showed all of the personality, and he was still all of him. And I think my personal observation is he was the best version of him. Also, I think the stats reflect that when he was at the Patriots. And he still had all the personality, and he wasn't hardly anything like the workman-like Patriots that you see from other guys, the Troy Browns and these other guys of the world. But then you see these other guys who think their way and their behavior gets to supersede everything about the program because their behavior is the most important thing. It's not. And that's part of going back to being maniacal, being intolerant, and being loving. That's why we have to be that within our culture, because we have to get the alignment and then create space for people to be themselves within it. So just don't violate our culture. That's it. I'm not going to tell you what to do a ton on 1,000 things, but here's four things we have to do, and you're not allowed to do the alternative. You just have to avoid doing these, four or five things that are outside the lines of our culture. And then number five, big one for young people especially, don't get involved with the wrong people. Could be a girl, could be a guy, could be a group, could be a family member. Don't get involved with the wrong people. When you get involved with the wrong people, behavior starts to shift. Focus goes away, emotions start coming in, all kinds of different things start getting affected. So just don't get involved with the wrong people. Have less friends. Talk to people less. Shut yourself off. Do whatever it is that you have to do. So those are five don'ts, and I'll just go through the five real quick. Number one, don't do anything to take away from practice or playing time. Number two, don't lie to your team, your coaches, your colleagues. Number three, don't blame, complain, defend. No BCD. Number four, don't violate our culture. Number five, don't get involved with the wrong people. And so I ask Keith, how many games in a 10 to 12 game season are going to be lost because somebody on the team, player or coach, did one or more of those five things?
In this next section, BK focuses on how self-awareness is important to growth as a coach and how coaches need to use self-awareness as a tool for getting better.
And self-awareness is the tool for that. Because look, just look around. Observe this yourself. Look at the coaches out there who get into crisis. Look at the coaches who get fired. Look at the coaches who display the same patterns at four or five different programs or organizations. Just watch. Here's what you rarely see. You rarely see a coach who is at, think of any level, who goes to four or five, six different programs over the course of time, and then is constantly making mistakes on opposite ends of the spectrum at every different location that they go to, where one way they fail in this fashion, and then they completely overhaul everything and become a totally and completely different coach, and then they completely fail on the other side. And that, you rarely see that. I can't even think of a single example of that. What I can think of a bunch of examples at is a coach who keeps making the same mistakes at different places or at the same place every few years, and their lack of self-awareness to either understand that or do something about it continually causes them to make the same error again and again and again. And maybe the kiss of death in that process is being a good enough coach to win some games in the meantime so that you don't ever feel the pressure to have to change and that you feel entitled to continue being the same person you've been for 10 to 20 years without making significant changes. And I would put that on myself first before I would ever point and try to highlight that in any other coach, because that applies to all of us. We're just here talking about coaching football.
Well, I'd say I see those patterns for sure. You're right. You can see them again and again. And I think it goes to what you just said. You win enough games that you have the opportunity to go and do it again. And you make the mistake of saying that, well, I'm winning games. It's working. Why should I do anything different? I think it's a cycle that repeats itself. You know, for whatever reason, you will see those guys get jobs again and again. And sometimes they make those changes. And sometimes they're doomed to repeat history again.
And let's look, right? Let's look at, say, because ultimately in self-awareness, the question is whether or not you are living in such a way, coaching in such a way, as to say, I'm comfortable with all of the things that I'm doing. And regardless of the outcome that happens here, I'll do it this way all the time. And the outcome is somewhat irrelevant to me. I mean, in terms of changing my behavior, like if you're willing to live with the outcome and not complain about it, if it doesn't go the way you want, keep going down the path you want. But if you're going to act the way you want to act and you don't want to do the self-awareness work and you don't want to make any changes and you want to, you know, you want to kind of do, you know, and be careful of this. Be careful of the, well, yeah, I'm always trying to get better. I'm so tired of hearing that phrase, Keith. Right? Like I even just got, like I got physically, like genuinely irritated even saying that out loud right now. Maybe in my line of work because I educate adults. You hear people who want to claim, oh yeah, I always believe in getting better and nobody's perfect. And, you know, I'm always trying to learn something. But ultimately what they're talking about is they're looking for like tricks. They're looking for little things. They're talking about the concept of getting better. Or in coaching, I'm always trying to get better at play scheme. I'm always trying to get better at practice design, technique. It's not, I'm always trying to get better by looking at the fact that I'm tough but emotionally fragile. I act like a tough guy, but when things get really hard for me personally, I break down. Or I look pretty calm and cool and collected, but underneath I'm genuinely insecure. And so I avoid confrontation. And I've been away for 10 years. That's the work I'm talking about. That's the kind you're not going to lose your football program and you're not going to get fired. You're not going to miss the opportunity with a really talented class, two classes of students who come through. You're not going to get fired because you just didn't quite teach hand placement technique on the O-line or DB unit well enough. You're not going to get fired for that. You might have some touchdowns scored on you for that, or you might not get some first downs, but you will get fired because you can't be told the truth because your ego was too big or you were too insecure or because you couldn't handle a difficult conversation and you backed away from them and people you needed to talk to, you avoided. You will get fired for that eventually. Maybe not this year, but at some point, that could cost you everything in the football sense, in the job sense, in the career sense. So I'm all about self-awareness and I'm all about lifelong learning in a lot of the true micro sense of, yeah, look where you can make some improvements. I'm a much bigger believer on the self-awareness that we're talking about here. And that is like the real and the deep kind, the life-changing kind, the risk prevention kind. And I guess I see this key stepping away from football. I see this so often. And again, I say I because I'm just talking about my experience and I don't want to talk about, you know, I don't want to keep it theoretical. I see this myself, my team, you know, the 12 people that work, you know, with me here in my company. We see this so often in so many professions by adults. And I share this at the national conference last year, and it got a lot of attention. You know, some of it people getting irritated, most of it people saying, Yeah, that's true. And that's this. The biggest issue that nobody's talking about is the entitlement of adult professionals. It's the biggest issue that we're not talking about publicly.
My thanks again to BK for all that he does for coaches. If you're looking to check out what he's up to right now, go to dailydiscipline.com and sign up for his Daily Discipline email, which is in your mailbox every day, 6 a.m., Monday through Friday. It's what I start my day with. This is an excellent way to start focusing and reflecting on those things you need to do to become a better coach. Check out all we're doing on Twitter, at FBDEVcoach. A lot of great off-season content for you there. Multiple topics, whether you're looking for the X's and O's or the philosophy or culture building like we do with BK. And check out our systems at footballdevelopment.com.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.